There's always next year, as they say, after Reading exited the FA Cup with a third round defeat at Old Trafford for the second time in 3 years. But a rather decent performance against Manchester United may have some fans believing in the Royals' chances of a relegation escape. In that battle, however, there will be no second chances. Welcome to episode 180 of the Tarleton Podcast with myself, Mark Mayer, your host as per usual. And joining me on this fine, sunny January afternoon is Westy. How's it going, mate? Been a while.
Very good, Mark. Yes, has been a while. Happy New Year to all the listeners.
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one to jump into, this 2-0 defeat, isn't it? I'm not quite sure where I want to, how optimistic I want to be out of it.
Well, I think the manager said it was a free hit and it turned out that way. Mm. I was glad to see them play in their new style. I thought maybe they might sort of revert back or not have a lot of the ball against Man United. And it was quite a surprise to me to see them have so much of the game compared to the last time we played them. Really, it was all over in the first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, you always do worry about those early goals, especially against Man United team. So yeah, we'll crack on to that in a bit. Then we'll also be doing a bit of a pub chat on the January transfer window and mailbag and preview for the Forest game as well. But before we do that, a quick thank you to all our Patreon donators. The money continues to drip through and be used in hopefully some very useful ways. Hopefully you noticed that with the coverage that we do. And as we get into the January transfer window, that will be a lot of man hours probably going into that and all the gossip and our transfer tracker that we have on the website and everything as well. So big thank you to all those who continue to donate as we get into the January purse strings being tightened and everything, and hopefully not too much around the club. We'll be getting onto that in a little bit, so we'll crack on then with the recap.
The view from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping all this week's action.
Now, Westy, in defining this performance, I'm really reluctant to call it plucky or valiant or, you know, those sort of terms that usually get thrown around when a smaller team goes to a bigger team and does well but doesn't win. So how do you sort of define this? Because I'm sort of struggling to come up with the right term almost.
I mean, plucky and valiant are often used, and I see you've wrote them down, hence you're using them in this quick speech. But I think encouraging was one. I don't think it taught us anything we didn't already know. Gomez obviously looking at it with fresh eyes, but we've been here before and seen it before. I think the worry was going back to possession-based football was it's going to be a bit Stam-esque and a bit boring and 50 touches in your own half that were completely unneeded. I thought it was better than that. I thought they tried to get it into the midfield quickly and they tried to move the ball to get it forward as fast as they possibly could. I would say sometimes it was a little bit pedestrian when they had better opportunities to get going quicker, especially when they got the ball wide. I think all it really showed us was, yes, we got players that can keep the ball and play football. And in the final third that we've seen for the last two or three seasons, it just wasn't good enough. I think we had opportunities that a better forward line would have taken. But yeah, it was encouraging, yes. But I think for Gomez, it would have just showed him that actually in a final third, we need a little bit more.
Well, if you think we had Loader, Harriet, McCleary and Swift as our sort of front four, have any of those scored this season? Maybe Swift has, but I really can't
think. Harriet scored last week. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you've got one or two goals in that front four in its entirety, which is not anything.
No.
It's not anything serious, is it?
And that showed, didn't it? And I think even when you looked at other options that we've got, in especially in centre forward, I don't think there's a lot. I mean, I know people have rant and raved about Mate in more recent weeks, but again, is he the answer? I don't really see it consistently from him. Yes, he's had a couple of decent performances and he's been much better than he has been in previous years. But again, I don't think he's the answer long term. And I don't think anyone's really, when you look at the forward line, it comes back way too quickly. I think Loader, yes, he ran around, he got in a good position, he probably should have scored. But again, he doesn't offer you enough. If you're trying to keep the ball, you want someone you can hit in forward areas, either over the top or on their chest, a bit like Jason Roberts and Kermigan, and they haven't got that sort of player. And until they can replace or get that sort of player, I think they're always going to struggle to play possession-based football and keep the ball in forward areas or at least look dangerous. Because I don't think, although we had opportunity, we never really looked like we was going to hurt them, did we?
It was that kind of indecisiveness. And you could tell when Man United came forward with the ball, it was snappy passing and they got into a shooting position very quickly. Whereas with Reading, we got there eventually. But apart from that Loader sort of going through one-on-one and a couple Harriet chances from outside the area, there wasn't that like clear-cut opportunity we needed. And that's actually, I think it's Yadom who had about three shots on goal. And that shows that it took an extra man gambling and finding extra space. And then at the end of the day, it falls to the wrong man in that sense because Yadom isn't going to ping it in from 15 yards, is he?
No, I genuinely just thought it for anyone like ourselves or people at home that have watched Premier League games compared to Championship games over the last 10, 20 years, it told you all you needed to know. I think Man United probably had another three or four gears to go up that they never actually used. And whenever they had opportunities, they put the ball in the net. And that was really the difference. Was there a big difference between defence and midfield? No, I thought Reading were pretty good. Probably better in both areas. Well, probably not defensively, but certainly in midfield. But when Man United got chances, you thought they're going to score. And if Reading would have got anywhere near them, I just think they had two or three gears to go up. They could have wiped us away if they really wanted to.
Well, Reading had a 60% in the possession, 84% pass success rate. So you do get the sense that that possession game really did return. I think the key thing when you say about earlier about how it's not like the Stam sort of football. And I thought the key thing with that is it didn't go back to Jarkola very often. And we know that Jarkola is not a very good goalkeeper with his feet, so it was a good thing that. But so often with the Stam football, it would be across the back line, back to the keeper, back to a defender, back to the keeper. And that would be a basically until we lump it forward anyway, because we haven't got any other outlets. But it did seem to get the ball into the advanced area a little bit quicker, even if then from being in the advanced area, it didn't really like go much.
Yeah, and that was just, especially forward, I mean, I said this last two or three seasons, Reading, when the ball gets into that last third, you've got players that make poor decisions probably 7-8 times out of 10. And I think this game showed that up quite nicely. I thought whenever we had opportunity or needed a quick ball or needed a cross or needed to shoot when we had the opportunity, it just didn't happen. And I think until you can get someone who can do that, then you're always going to struggle.
Yeah, so let's talk about some individual performances that we did pick out as very promising. We sort of said Danny Loader earlier, good positioning. At the end of the day, you're playing with an 18-year-old striker. There's going to be that indecisiveness and everything. But I thought Kelly was very decent, hadn't played in a while. Liam Moore looked very assured. Rinomota and Callum Harriott as well, his first start in like 2 years. He looked a real threat and something to build on from there. So what other sort of individual performances do you think you really picked out from that?
Yeah, again, I think Kelly's playing a more sort of withheld role where he can play football. I think it suits him much better. Rinomota, I think what an excellent player he could be. He hasn't proved it consistently over a season because he's young. But I think every time I watch him now, I think what a good player he could turn into. I thought he was a little bit wasted when he went to right back, but still putting a good performance. I think going forward, you really need to have him in field every week because he's really nailing that place down for me because he looks like not only is the best midfielder we've got at the club at the moment, but he certainly could be better. And I think you've got to try and nurture that as best as possible.
Well, wasn't it interesting at half-time when Alori was injured and you got O'Shea on the bench, you think straight centre-back for centre-back swap, and he brought on Aluko and pushed Yadom into the middle, Rinomota to right-back. And I thought that was a really telling sign of Jose Gomez's style and how he's going to be one who says, you know what, at the end of the day, we need to win games. We're not here to valiantly lose and everything. And no. I thought that was a really promising thing.
Yeah, I thought, again, it was a lot of positives come out of the game. I don't think anyone expected to go to Man United and win, but I also didn't expect Ren to go there and play the way they did, especially on the run of form we've had. And Harriott, again, I thought Harriott, the last two times I've seen him, I think for a guy who's not played for nearly two seasons, he looks like he could be first choice on that right wing at the moment because no one else has really stood out all season. So it's his to lose. He scored. He looked like a goal threat. And again, his fitness will get better and he'll only improve from here on in. So it's good to have him back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to come up with a new feature for the recaps, and that's the Magic Andy moment. Because I remember you had your champagne moment back in the day,
yeah, that's right, back in the day.
So I think the Magic Andy moment of whenever Rinomota does something that really stands out as, you know, there's not many things that we do these days that do stand out. And that's when he moved to right back, I thought he had Marcus Rashford in his pocket. Rashford had a real kind of difficult game coming from the left wing. He had that one time when he actually went round Jarkola and fell over quite entertainingly in the last few minutes. And you could see as he fell over, he was laughing to himself, wasn't he? And being able to do that sort of stuff, I think, is a real sign of the player you've got.
Yeah, he did. Again, yeah, excellent performance at right back. Again, I hope he doesn't nail that position down because I think he's better in midfield. But with Rashford, we were talking about this at work today. I said he chipped over the ball and fell on his backside and laughed about it. I said, I don't think they'd be laughing if the game would have been a bit closer. That's the sort of thing you get booed for.
You can do that against Reading and it doesn't matter.
You can get away with it, yeah, when you're 2-0 out of 10 minutes left.
So where does this stand us going into the next few league games then? Because I'm still trying to work out exactly what it does for us. And in that sense, which do you think is the more important performance, the Swansea one or the Man United one? Because that Swansea one was obviously so awful. And you know in every season, you get those performances where you're above and below your normal. But which one do you think is actually going to be more relevant for us in the next few weeks?
Well, I hope Man United, but I fear maybe the Swansea game. I think the worst thing is we played really poorly against Swansea and we got hammered. And then we played really well against Man United and we still get beat. And yeah. I think that is the worrying thing, that when we put in a good performance, we still end up getting beat. Yes, the quality is much better and we all know that. But we've seen this in the Championship as well. When we've, even against QPR, I thought Reading played some good football, still couldn't manage to win. And that's our issue. That's what needs to change. And I hope that's what gets addressed in the transfer window, because you really need someone who's putting a ball in the net consistently.
Yeah, I'm really not sure that Man United performance would necessarily have beaten Nottingham Forest or Swansea had we played exactly like that. Because as you say, I think we probably would have drawn, but are still not necessarily going and getting the win in that
game. No, we had good chances. We created what I would say were good chances to score. And it doesn't matter who you're playing against. If you're in that position, you need to put the ball in the net. Now, Man United did when they got the chances, and we quite clearly didn't. And that's happened consistently for not only the last couple of weeks, but pretty much all season.
Yeah, well, you say about finding someone in the January transfer window to improve the squad. Reading have already made a signing, so we'll jump into pub chat now and discuss the ins and quite particularly the outs for the transfer window.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right then, January transfer window is underway and Reading have jumped right in with quite a number of exits already. We've had Dave Edwards go to Shrewsbury, seems like a bit of a free transfer that one. Axel Endresen, the young centre-back, has kept his stay in Norway to be permanent. He was on loan at Viking, he's now permanently there. And Josh Sims has been sent back to Southampton, basically just because we can. It seems like a bit of an easy one, that one, just... You need to trim out the squad, get rid of the lone players. So, any arguments with those?
No, not really. I think Harriet's re-emergence has probably pushed that along a little bit quicker as well. Edwards, I've made it quite clear on the show, when he first came here that he'd be a flop, and he did end up being a flop. Like I said, if you've done 10 years at another club, it's very rare you come to a side and step into it and carry that over, because you've built up that 10 years of credit, and when people see you with fresh eyes... they realise you're finished.
Especially when you are, if you're a box-to-box midfielder and you're getting on a bit and your physicality and his fitness isn't quite there, then you lose your best asset, really, don't you?
Do you know what? I think it'd be a great signing for Shrewsbury. I think his heart would be in it and he'd probably go there and be a star man.
And everyone will love him.
Yeah, and everyone will love him, and good luck to him. But Sims, again, he's shown flashes. I mean, he's got us a lot of penalties this year, but he's never really nailed down the position, which he should have done. He come with a big billing. And as for the young defender, it's a good opportunity for him to play first-team football, and you can't really blame him for going. And for Reading, we've seen we've got a lot of good centre-backs at the club as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've also loaned out Darren Siddle, the Dutch right-back, Luke Southwood, the goalkeeper, and Ben House, the young striker who's gone to Swindon, which is actually a pretty decent move for a player who's never played professionally before. So that's interesting to see how that unfolds. In terms of players who... might be going, we've had Vito Minoni, Paul McShane, David Myler and Mark McNulty touted around in the media as being transfer listed. Thiago Ilori is apparently wanted by Sporting Lisbon, and Tyler Blackett is apparently wanted by Wigan and Stoke and various other Championship teams. It seems like all those names, perhaps Ilori aside, and maybe Blackett as well because he's been in the first team this year, but certainly those first four names, the four M's as it were, really, you wouldn't miss them.
No, and you haven't really missed him, have you? I mean, Minone, I made it quite clear on this whenever I've been on the show that I don't rate him as a goalkeeper. I think he flaps. I think he's letting a lot of soft goals. And to be honest, if he's a £2 million goalkeeper, then I think me and you must be worth a million. Do you know what I mean? He's awful. So I won't miss him if he goes. I expect he'll end up going back to Italy. And again, good luck to him. McShane, been a decent servant to the club. But we've seen whenever he's played, especially against Blackburn, that his legs are gone. And he's not a Championship footballer anymore.
He's still club captain, isn't he?
Yeah.
For someone who's club captain, he's never like brought out in the media or anything like that. He's never wheeled out as a spokesperson for the club. He's kept very much behind closed doors.
Doesn't that make you wonder why, though? Do you know what I mean? Because we've had a lot of club captains down the years that have sort of slipped out the side, and they've still been sort of representing us, and McShane isn't. So
no, definitely.
It makes you wonder why these players have been...
no smoke without fire.
No, pushed out. Mailer, he's been another flop.
Really disappointed with Mailer, because I thought coming in, you know, a bit big, hard centre midfielder to come in and shake things up from the middle, and he's just not been that at all.
Well, it's what we needed, wasn't it? I mean, we was crying out for it. And as a free transfer, you thought, well, this is a no-brainer.
Championship experience.
Yeah, and I expected him to start Irish international. But again, there's been a few grumblings around him at every club he's been to in general. And even with Ireland, when he was demanding to play, he got well, told in no uncertain terms that he's not even playing football. So, again, he looks like he could be a problem player, hence they're getting rid of him. McNulty, again, I think I said when he first came here, it's very difficult to step up from League Two to the Championship, and you have to be some player. I think with McNulty, he showed a few nice touches here and there, but he looks too weak and too slow to play Championship football.
Yeah, I wanted it to work out because it's an ideal Reading signing, isn't it? Picking players up from the lower leagues and making them into something, but there's a risk with that and it doesn't always work out. You're either Kevin Doyle or you're Carl Shepherd at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think he slipped down the leagues before. I think he played high and ended up in League 2.
He was in Sheffield United for a little bit.
So he's clearly not good enough. And again, if he gets a move to a League 1 side, it'd be a good signing for him. But for us, no, he's not going to fire us into the Premier League. The only thing I'm disappointed about is Allori, really. I think it'd be a shame for him to go. I think he's a good footballer.
Yeah, well, Sporting Lisbon is a decent team in Portugal as well. Obviously, the team he used to play for. And I think the idea is that Reading want to get back the £4 million that we paid for him. And I'm not entirely sure that we're going to have that offered for us.
No, I think they might get some of it back. But I think this is more... I don't think with Allori especially, I think since Gomez has come in, he's been pretty much first pick. I think he plays his style of football. Again, he's Portuguese, which probably helps. And I don't think they want to sell him particularly. I think Allori wants to leave. And
the way
things have been going the last two, 3 years, you can barely blame him for that. But it'd be a shame to see him go. And Blackett as well, you know, he divides opinion in the fact that I think I heard you say a couple of weeks ago, you know, he's booed off the pitch. But despite that, he comes back and he does put in some good performances and he's played well at centre-back over the last couple of weeks. And I think he's a player that I like to have in the squad because he's useful.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, if we get relegated, it won't be because of Tyler Blackett.
No.
You know, he might have a couple mares here and there, and he's very noticeable when he does have his mistakes. But, you know, it's going to be for a much wider issue than one single player like that. Or some even Allori is another player who, at the end of the day, gives you more good than bad.
Yeah, I thought his first season in the Championship, he struggled with the pace of it. Just thinking he had a lot more time he did, but I think he's got to grips with that. It's a bit better this year. And with Blackett, you know, he's got this 1 second switch off, hasn't he, where his switch goes down and it's too late to react. But I think, again, he's knocked a lot of that out of his game over the course of this season. So them two I would like to keep, but for the other four, like you said, I don't think we miss any of them.
Yeah, there's been some rumblings around Vito Minoni as well on social media. Not every fan would have seen that a private message Vito Minoni sent to a fan complaining about the fact that he was outcast with the reserves, had to use like a different canteen and various things like that, and felt that it was very disrespectful. I don't know who made these decisions, because it could have been Paul Clement for all we know, could have been Jose Gomez, could have been higher up, or, you know, we've had different managers and everything. So it kind of harks back to the I suppose the other time in Reading's history when they had to get shot of so many players was that Gang of Five of Tommy Burns era and all the sort of furore that surrounded that. Do you think it's kind of unnecessary evil to outcast players and shove them on, or is actually it's a sign of a club that's not doing well at the end of the day?
I don't know. I think especially because it's so time constrained, you know what I mean, because you've only got January to get rid of them. I think the club think, right, let's treat them badly and make sure they leave rather than let's be nice about it and let them sit on big contracts.
Yeah, if you say to them, well, you know, you're on say 10 grand a week and we're going to give you a chance every now and again, we're going to make you think like you can get some first team football here, but in reality it's not actually going to be there, then you may as well say to them, look, really, you need to go.
And I don't know personally, but you don't know what sort of characters they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether manager sat there and thought, do you know what, I think you're disruptive to this squad and you're not helping. Minone, again, he come with big billing. He was first choice. Has he done enough for everyone to say, do you know what, Minone should be playing every week? No. And I think that comes down to attitude. And if your attitude's not that you want to be the number one every week, then we don't need to have you here.
Yeah, and we've got so many goalkeepers as well. That's the problem. When you build up these... Paul Clement was perhaps the driving force behind bringing Sam Walker to the club, because he was ex-Chelsea and knew each other. And, you know, there's a decent goalkeeper, Sam Walker, but we already had Iarcola, who's beaten expectations this year. Vito Minoni was in the goal at the start of the season, played pretty poorly in the first couple of games and got moved out.
Yeah.
And then you've got a lot of young players as well, like George Legg, Luke Southwood, who all... As far as I'm aware, if you've got an academy player who is that sort of your ideal under-18 goalkeeper, then they should be the ones who have a good shot of being the third or fourth choice.
Yeah, and why not? And I think Iarcola is a prime example of the attitude you should have, because he was third-choice goalkeeper. There was no chance for him playing this year as far as he's all concerned. But for his persistence and training and the fact that he gives it all he's got, he is first choice, and fair play to him. And if more of them had that sort of attitude, then maybe we wouldn't be in trouble,
yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully the attitude of Ovi Ejaria, which is a name I'm not sure if you're familiar with. I certainly wasn't familiar with until about, you know, yesterday, about 12 o'clock.
Definitely none of us were.
He's the a bit of a playmaker who Reading have brought in on loan from Liverpool. He was at Rangers at the start of the season, then got... He played quite a lot, actually, but got allowed to go back to Rangers. He was at Sunderland last year in the sort of last 6 months. We've actually, on the town end of the website, we've got a view from a Sunderland and a Liverpool fan on this central midfielder we've signed up. Sunderland fan saying, his main problem was that he never really excelled or expressed himself, playing for a football club infected by a toxic losing culture. Can't imagine there's going to be much change in his life now. Some fans would also argue he's too lightweight and not aggressive enough for a division like the Championship. The Liverpool fan, however, said he's exciting to watch, wants the ball at his feet, wants to make things happen and reads the game very well. He can pick out a pass, is great with the ball, and his close control is particularly impressive. What's your... Based on those, obviously, probably not many fans have ever watched him, but based on those, what's your sort of early idea on where he can fit into the team and how useful he's going to be?
Well, I've been saying we need a number 10. Again, I'm not a big Swift fan. I think he gives the ball away too easily, doesn't defend very well, and he's not even scoring goals at the moment, so he's not even giving you that. So they do need someone who can sit in that hole and play football. I think this looks like this is the reason why he's brought him in. We do miss that sort of creative, forward-thinking player. If he can come in and do that, then great. The concern is that Rangers didn't keep him around for as long as they could have done. And at Sunderland, like I said, when he was in a relegation battle, he wasn't the best of help.
Yeah, yeah.
So looking at it from that point of view, it might be a no-good signing. But if he can... He's obviously got talent, you know what I mean? You don't play for Arsenal. I think it was at Arsenal first, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Then Liverpool. They don't take a punt on you unless they think you've got it. And let's hope he can prove it. I mean, he's 21 now, so he's certainly at an age where he should be pushing on in his career. And let's hope this is the opportunity he takes.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you sign number 10 players, it is kind of an all or nothing kind of signing, isn't it? They either come in, it clicks perfectly, and they generate some goals and assists quite quickly, or they come in and it just their relationship with the other players on like a footballing level doesn't work. And, you know, they get shoved off the ball a bit too easily, kind of like Swift at the moment gets shoved off the ball too easily. And then they kind of shirk and go within themselves and it just... falls apart completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to address the issue that we've clearly got, which is we need someone who can be a playmaker further forward on the pitch, but it doesn't make any difference whatsoever if the other three players that you're attacking with can't do the job of putting the ball in the net.
Yeah,
so it doesn't matter how many balls you put through, if the ball goes wide or keep saving it, then you've got no assists when you should have, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
essentially. So it's a step in the right direction. We need to get forward thinking players and players that can produce something further forward. Will he do it? Let's hope so.
Yeah, well, one player who he's going to be up against in the sort of selection stakes is Sonny Aluko, who came off the bench and played relatively well at United on the weekend, and he's one of the players that's discussed in the mailbag, which we'll be moving on to now.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right then, as we were saying just off there, is this the third coming or the fourth coming of Sonny Aluko? An impressive moment off the bench, and well, it seems like he might have a Reading career after all that time of him not having a Reading career. And in the mailbag, Paul Williams starts us off, former podcast associate of
That's
yours.
It, definitely.
He says, to use the old cliche, if Gomez can get Aluko playing to this level, to his level, then he will be like a new signing. Luke Rogers saying Aluko played great in a more central role at Man United. I'm hoping he gets a chance in that position over the next few games. And Neil Hussey saying, I give Aluko another chance. If we have cash to spend, I'd like to see Jack Watmore, a centre-back at Portsmouth. He could replace Lloris should he go. Now, Sonny Aluko, is it like we have a choice, basically, in giving him another chance? Because if you don't play him, then you're playing someone who is equally on bad form.
I think when we first signed Aluko, everyone was pretty happy with that. I don't remember too many people saying, that's a poor signing. Mm-hmm. Yes, we paid a lot of money for him, but from what I'd seen of him, certainly against us in certain matches, he ripped us apart. Have we seen that at Reading? No, we haven't seen it at all. And I think the more his sort of poor performance came, the worse it gets for him. You start trying harder and then making more mistakes. Aluko's got talent. We know he has. Has he showed it to us? No, he hasn't. Again, a new manager could be what he needs to sort of reinvigorate him. I think he's better probably playing central, because I think down the wing he becomes a bit one-trick pony and a bit light.
And yeah, like cut inside and
too
that's
predictable.
It.
Mm. But centrally, I think he's, you know, he can run with the ball. He can cause teams problems. Can he do it consistently? He's sitting doing it with Fulham. We could do with him really, even if he plays another half as 25% well. Better. Do you know what I mean? We'll be happy with that. Yeah, I hope so. I hope he can be a new signing to us. And again, hopefully the manager can get the best out of him and some of the other players that have sort of been poor over the last 18 months.
Well, he certainly, when he was at Fulham, it was that kind of forward-thinking, attacking, possession football that that Jokanović sort of dealt in. And that's kind of what Stam dealt in. It wasn't particularly forward-thinking. Clement, I wouldn't say Clement suited Aluko in any kind of way.
No, I think Aluko, you don't want him having to defend. You want him to be a more of a sort of free roaming type midfield player, yeah. Or second striker, whatever you want to call him. I think if you ask him to play at the wing, you ask him to defend, then you may as well forget it.
And I think that's why McCleary's in the team ahead of Barrow at the moment, because McCleary does get back and do the dirty work, whereas Barrow just, you know, never ever did, basically. No. Never have, never will.
And he won't, no. So you know what you've got when you've got Barrow and Aluko, very similar. And you can't have too many of them players in your team because you can't defend, and that's exactly what we've seen over the course of the last 2 years.
Yeah. Fenner's asked, target man striker who's proven at this level is what he wants to see, alone. Deal will do. Need someone to hang around the 6-yard box and stick it in the net. Tom Jordan saying that without knowing Gomez's conversation with the players, he thinks Gunter should stay, as he always has given his all for the club. Aluko is beginning to fit into the midfield. Bring in Peter Crouch on loan as a target up front. Play as we did at United and score goals. Target man striker. It's a bit of a relic almost in the sort of footballing states. Can you imagine Gomez as a manager who wants a big sort of bulky striker to play into, or is it more like a nippy loader sort of player who he's going to prefer?
I genuinely don't know where he's going to go with this one. From what we've got in our ranks, Bodvarsson, you can hit him, but is he a great footballer? I don't think so.
Is he going to play others in? Unlikely.
Yeah, unlikely. But again, if you can get the ball in and you can put the ball in there, that's all you really need. You know, we've had strikers here that fit the bill nicely, but they're not easy to come by. I think I was listening to a podcast from Christmas yesterday, funny enough, and I think when we was on about players that we miss, and although you were right with Danny Williams, he is missed. I think the biggest miss to that side, and it was obvious the season after, was Jan Kermigan, because the work that he'd done, not just forward but all through the team, was what basically got us into third position.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't create a lot of chances that season and we ended up third. He was great in the air. And when you look at the comparisons to what we've got now, there is no comparison. I don't think there is anyone. Jason Roberts was another one. When he come into an average team, he looked like, well, he was a breath of fresh air and he played others into it, and people like Noel Hunt all of a sudden looked like good footballers. They need that sort of player. Are they going to get that sort of player? I don't think they exist. So
yeah,
no.
That's the thing, because if you look over Reading's history as a football team, apart from, I can think, maybe Forster and Leto are the only sort of pace-based players who you could play in behind and go through one-on-one that actually worked. We had Vidra, Lewis Graben, Simon Cox to an extent, all nippy players who want the ball in behind, and we just didn't really know what to do with them.
No, in fact, if we grab him, we probably put his career back 18 months.
So yeah, we played him at centre mid in one game. Like.
Even Glenn Murray came into what was an average team at the side, and he scored 8-9 goals in a team that wasn't creating anything. And that's the sort of play you need to get hold of. But again, how are you going to get him? I don't see it happening, unless you've got some spark from abroad that we don't know about, and from Portugal maybe, and come in and do that job. Again, it's very hard to come from another European league and get straight into the Championship and hit the ground running.
Yeah, well, even Kermigan, like, if you think he came in having not really played for 6 months, and it took him 6 months to really get into the groove again, and he was, when he was under McDermott, in that sort of first stint, really didn't look like he was going to be worth anything, did
he? No. I also remember Glenn Little coming in on loan from Burnley, and he looked awful when we had him on loan, and we bought him, and he ended up being the great player that he obviously was. But yeah, that's the sort of player they need, Reading. Are they going to get that player? Oh, I don't think so. It's difficult.
Yeah, everyone. It's that old cliche, isn't it? Everyone's after a goal scorer in January. And at the end of the day, if you're the team who's near the bottom of the Championship, and you might have a bit more money than, say, like a Sheffield United or someone like that, but where are they going to go? They're not going to necessarily go to, are they?
It's funny with those, sorry, just before we carry on there. It's funny with those with Roberts, and Kermigan. They were both players that were getting towards sort of the twilight of their career, and their experience and their ability to hold a ball and play others in was what really Reading needed at the time, and that's what they need now. Now, do you want to go and get a journeyman 34-year-old striker? Probably not, but in respect to them two, they made average teams very good.
Yeah.
So maybe there's scope for that. If you go and get a young player learning his trade, is that what we need? Because we've got them now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've got a lot of academy players. And also, like, if you think, like, one of the best teams in the Championship at the moment is Sheffield United, and they've got Leon Clark and Billy Sharp up front. And obviously, Billy Sharp is a renowned Championship goal scorer, except for the time when he was at Reading.
Yeah, another one we put their career about 18 months. Yeah,
exactly. But Leon Clark, you know, I'd look at him and say, oh, he's a bit of a cart horse. He's into his 30s now. He's not really played the Premier League or anything like that. And he does a great job as a target man forward.
Yeah. Again, you've got legs in that side of Reading's team. There's plenty of them. But you need someone who can hold the ball in forward areas, and we haven't really got that sort of player.
Yeah, well, Sam Richards says he'd actually be fine with Aloy being sold. He's a decent player, but I think he makes too many costly mistakes and doesn't seem to learn. But hoping we can sign a good solid defender to play with more on a regular basis. Centre back's the highest priority signing for Sam, followed by a goalkeeper, a centre midfielder and a striker. I would say we have a lot of centre midfielders at the moment, and with Ezra Talahi, and Bakuna not currently in the team, you've already got Kelly Swift, now Ajaria, and Rina Mota. Seems like centre mid, and also centre back, if you're selling players to then bring in people, it's unlikely to me that we're going to go and sign someone better than Ilori.
No, I don't think
so.
So
it seems a risky game to be letting people go and then hoping that whoever you bring in is better.
The thing is, Matt, I mean, we keep harping on about how poor we are defensively, but when you're defending for a lot of the game, you are going to concede goals. And if there's no one in forward areas that can hold a ball, like I keep talking about, then you're under pressure all the game. And that's basically what's happened for the last two seasons. I don't think signing a centre-back is a high priority. It wouldn't hurt to have another decent one, obviously. But again, I think they need someone who's got Championship experience and, you know, is an older head, but not O'Shea.
Yeah, not
someone who can still move, for being nice.
Yeah, older head, younger legs.
Yeah, just definitely sort of, I'm talking about 28, 29 sort of age, not 34, 35, 36, you know. But again, getting them sort of players, they're a premium. And do you want to sit another young centre back in there with more, knowing the problems we've had all season? I don't think you do, unless they're exceptional, but you ain't going
to
get that sort of
thing. I always think when it comes to the defence, I always think that it's the coach is 80% more important for how the defence is set up and how it's organised than it is in almost pretty much any other position. Because, you think like Tony Pulis and Neil Warnock, no matter what defenders they have at clubs they go to, it works.
Yeah.
They manage to get them defending well. And I think it's all about the planning and organisation of the defence that makes the difference. And players like Ilori and Moore, if Moore played for a Tony Pulis team, then he'd probably be one of the best defenders in the Championship. But he played for Yapstam, who was relatively okay at defending, Paul Clement, who didn't know what he wanted, and Gomez, who's only just got in. So it's difficult.
Yeah, and I think also, I mean, we look at the four defenders, but defending is a team game. And if the team's organised and it doesn't get there in the first place, then you defend well.
Yeah.
And I think that's been Reading's major problem. I think I said at the start of the season, I thought the central midfield was going to be their issue. I think they're addressing that now, but certainly throughout the season, no one's really nailed down a position. Even now, Kelly's in and out. I think they're too open sometimes. And with players like Swift and Kelly and not Renamel, I'm not going to count him in this, but even Bakuna, I think when you've got your backs to the wall, I think they go missing far too often.
Yeah, it always worries me when it's Kelly and Swift as part of two men in a three-man midfield. I think that's far too bypassable. You can always get players in and around them, and the other players are going to just shrug them off half the time, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And do you know my mate come over from Australia, and he come to the one before, and he said, oh, Bakuna looks like a decent player. I said, yeah, you wait until they can see the goal. And then as soon as they can see the goal, he's kicked the ball out of play three times. You know, he's tripped over his own laces. I said, he's not the sort of bloke you want in the trenches with you.
No.
And even the other day when he got sent off needlessly, I mean, I didn't think he'd done a lot wrong. But even so, he's got that in his locker. And I think we've got too many players in midfield that don't really battle too hard.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, isn't it? And it's signing those players. We thought we signed, as we said earlier, David Milo was a good battler.
Yeah.
He's gone missing like the... like the win. Like, I've never seen a player go missing from a club as well as David Milo.
Yeah, he's done an amazing job. I mean, he's very opinionated on Twitter and stuff like that, and he seems to keep in contact with the fans, but we want to see him on the pitch putting in performances, and that's just not going to happen, is it?
No. Well, we'll move on round off the show then with a look ahead to the Nottingham Forest game on the weekend, because as we mentioned, Lewis Grabban earlier, it seems like the past player curse could well be coming back to haunt us. So we'll be doing that at the end of the show.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
3 o'clock on Saturday, back at the Mad Stad, which I'd say is a nice thing, but it's not really. You've always been a nice thing going back home and playing football recently, because, you know, as we say, we lost 4-1 out there last time, and we're playing a Nottingham Forest team with a really weird kind of sense about them, because it's probably been their best season for, you know, almost a decade or a number of decades even, as they threatened to get into the playoffs. They haven't been in the Premier League for a while, and yet Aitor Karanka, 4 points off the playoffs, they're seventh, and his job's under threat, and it seems like that's having a real impact on the team and makes this one perhaps once there for the taking.
Well, you'd hope so. They've got patchy form, but they've got some form, you know what I mean? They're the sort of team that can produced a result against better sides than us, that's for certain. I think Reading really desperately need to sort out their home form and start winning a few games. I think I was listening to the radio the other day and I said we need 8 wins from 20 and we've had 7 in the calendar year. So
yeah,
it looks like we're going to get relegated unless there's an amazing upturn in fortunes over the next 6, 8, 12 weeks. Will it start with Nottingham Forest? Well, I think we will hope so. Better than I've been hoping for a decent home win for quite some time, and I've not seen one. So, I think probably Forest feel like it's a game they can win, and they will come and try and win it.
Yeah, well, I expect so. It's actually been quite a high scoring team, quite un-Karanka like in recent weeks. They've drawn 5-5 against Villa. They beat Leeds 4-2 the other day and drew 3-3 against Norwich recently. And that was actually a game they were 3-1 up in, I think, with even 3-0 up in with like 5 minutes to go or something silly. So, yeah, they're not quite as defensively sound as you'd expect. There's been one draw between the teams in the last 9 meetings. Forest have won 20 historically, Reading 15 with 10 draws over the years. They've also not won on the road since late November, with just 2 wins since then, sort of alluding to that patchy form you said there. And and the ex-player curse, Lewis Grabban, 14 goals in 24 appearances this season. He's a bit of a fitness doubt, though. So, I don't know. I think this one is such a weird game, because it was kind of like when we played Bristol City a few weeks ago, and that was actually our last win, I think, now, is that you come up against these teams in the Championship that you know are decent on their day, and you know can be absolutely terrible on their day. And it seems like almost this season we've come up against teams who are good on their day rather than bad on their day too often this year. Like Swansea and Ipswich were on their day. And it's almost unlucky that teams...
Well, is it unlucky or just we haven't had a day that we looked half decent? I think a lot of it comes down to your attitude at the start of the match. I think a lot of sides have come down here recently and played a holding midfielder and then realised that actually Reading ain't got nothing up front here. There's no point.
Yeah, Sheffield United did that,
didn't they? Yeah. And as soon as they realised that, I knew he was in trouble. I thought, in fact, I actually lumped on Sheffield United to win the second half. I know I shouldn't, but...
Well, you cashed in for it.
It looked like a no-brainer, because as soon as they went forward, I thought, right, we're going to crumble at some point, because we just didn't look like scoring. And if Forest have learnt that and sat and watched us for any length of time, they're going to figure that out as well. So if they start quickly and score early, again, I think we might have the same problem we've had for most of the season, where the fans will go quiet, the atmosphere won't turn toxic. And I think actually the Reading fans should be commended for the way they've backed the team over the last 2 years, because it's very rarely have they turned on them, and they could have done plenty of times. I know it's sometimes a bit of a soulless atmosphere, but I think the players need to take responsibility there and say, look, let's go out first 10-15 minutes, let's give it all we got, let's try and get a good start, and let's not crumble after 10 minutes.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, because the sort of Swansea game versus the United game, I remember saying to my dad, like, it's actually refreshing in a way to have a 90-minute good and then a 90-minute bad, or 90-minute bad and 90-minute good performance, because usually we play well for 10 minutes, then concede, and then it's 80 minutes of absolutely shocking football. So if we've actually become a team where we're consistent one way or another for 90 minutes, hopefully in the 90 minutes we're good, we'll actually win some games, as opposed to continually scoring and then conceding and conceding again.
And ironically, we said off air before we went back on to do this last part, Lewis Grabban would probably be the perfect player we could have up front, because he can hold a ball and he can run with it. And like I said, whenever he's been since he left us, when he was playing right wing, central midfield, wherever we had him playing, he scored goals. And he wouldn't be a bad shout, but again, you won't get hold of him.
Exactly. No matter how much money we like to think we have, and it does kind of feel like we have a bit of money at the moment to play with. But yeah, I think it's an odd one with Reading, because for so many years now, I think for at least the last 3 or 4, it seems like as soon as a team has worked us out, then we're done. And so often we've had teams, even under Adkins and Stam especially, as soon as you get that sort of magic solution to playing Reading, then there is absolutely no answer to us. And Jose Gomez won't have that plan B yet, and I don't know if he ever will, but it does feel like we're always susceptible to that little change in tactics and then we're done.
Yeah, that's it. Again, it's happened and happened and happened, and until we can have some forward-thinking players that make the right decisions and put the ball in there, like I said all the show, you're always going to have that issue, because teams don't need to defend against us too deeply, because we haven't got no pace forward areas anyway, and they know we're not going to, like Middlesbrough soon figured out that every time the ball got pumped forward, it was their ball. And there's no option up front, apart from Bob Varson, who's not been fit, that you can say, well, at least he'll battle and kick and run around and give you problems. And if the ball gets played into the right areas, we'll put the ball in there. Whereas everyone else, we've got Mate included, they're just not good enough in general.
Yeah, well, predictions then. We obviously didn't have the prediction league bought in for the United game. We're back on the prediction league bandwagon for the Forest game. So where are you going to lay your cards down for this? Completely, I'd say it's actually, because Forest are so inconsistent and because we're actually becoming inconsistent now as well.
It's impossible to predict.
It is really difficult to predict, isn't it?
I'm going to say, just because I really want it to happen, that we will nick a 2-1.
I'm going to go 2-1 Reading as well, actually, because it is...
I genuinely don't think that's going to happen, but I just really want it to.
I also think at some point, even the worst teams win games, and it feels like this is one of those with Karanka being under pressure and Reading having come off a good performance. We're not going to... I can't imagine we're going to change the team at all, if very much.
No, and I can't imagine that the manager will put up with a performance like the Swansea one again.
No.
And I don't think the players... if they're going to stay up, they really need to start this week. And I think this is a decent opportunity to get a decent result.
Definitely. And also, if the players in the team are looking at how players like Mannone are being outcast and sent on their way to League One and whatnot, then, you know, they should really realise that they're also susceptible to being shown the door.
Definitely. And I like the fact that we had 4 academy starters against Man United.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that. I think, again, it's been sort of pushed to the back of everyone's mind over the last year or so, bringing these players through, they look good enough, and if they're good enough, then they should play. And at least, like McIntyre, who started every week, at least them players, they want us to win because they're from here, or they're Reading fans, or they've been here a long time. And I think that is probably the only way that we might stay up, the fact that players that are on the pitch actually are desperate to stay up, rather than, oh well, it doesn't matter, we can go somewhere else afterwards.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned McIntyre, actually, because he lives basically down the road from where we're doing this podcast now. He's about a 2-minute drive away from here, and he actually, it turned out that in that Rotherham game where he got a bit of a bash to the head and played on, that he had a fractured skull, which seems a bit like who was that City goalkeeper? Is it Bert Trouton or something like that?
Bert Trouton, a broken neck.
Yeah, it seems like it should really be held up on that sort of pedestal, but sadly we're not that good a club to be able to bring those players through. So, yeah.
Well, on that point, could you imagine someone like Mo Barrow or staying out on the pitch with a fractured skull? No.
No, I don't think so, sadly. No.
I think if he broke his toe, now, he'd probably come off. That's the difference. And that's the sort of player you need.
Yeah,
you
can take a kick. I think Callum Harriott is someone who can fit into that category now, as someone who can fight, having been down for 2 years, that he can come back and do stuff.
The best one like that was Sonko, when he... done his cruciate ligament and still played for half an hour.
And that ruined his career, sadly.
Ruined his career, but that's a proper man.
Yeah, you can respect that kind of...
You respect
that loss of earning that he made. Or I suppose he got back to the Premier League, but yeah, didn't do so well. So yeah, that draws to the end, episode 180 of the Tarleton Podcast. Ollie will be in position on Thursday to fully preview the Nottingham Forest game, and then we'll be back next week to look back on Reading's triumphant return to form and our first push against relegation.
And I really hope me eating my words about our strike force, I hope they've scored 3 or 4 goals and I've been completely sharp.
I honestly can't think of the last time we scored 4 goals.
I don't think you might see us score 4 goals for some time.
Yeah. not until the first day of League One against Scunthorpe next season.
Maybe.
Well, thanks for joining us, Westy, for this nice little chat about Reading. Nice to have you back.
Always a pleasure. It was nice to get a mention as well on BT Sports the other way. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually going to put that just at the end of the podcast, so everyone can have a listen to that as the BT Sport guys gave us a nice little mention. He said that he's judging the mood amongst the Reading fans and he'd be listening to us, and said that the Tarlhurst End was the noisiest part of Elm Park, which some people on Twitter did have a mention saying that's not necessarily the case.
No, I wouldn't say that was the case, but yeah, it was nice to get mentioned in it.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tarlhurst End, I suppose the way that I put it is that it was the slightly less noisy but more thoughtful section of the Reading crowd, and that's what we always attain to be.
Yeah, behind the goal type.
Yeah.
Still, critique.
Yeah, still supporting, but maybe not jumping on the pitch and shouting at people at the end of the day.
Maybe eating the pies and not chucking them.
that should be we used to be the Unprofessional Joker podcast. Now we're eating the pies and not chucking them.
I think that's when I run it. It was an Unprofessional Joker podcast.
Nah, these days we're far too sensible. Cheers, Wesley, then. And yeah, we'll be back in a week. And hopefully we'll be celebrating a continued, not a return to form, because I feel like we're on a bit of form now.
I kind of hope so.
So hoping for the continuation of our good form. Come on, you arse.
This is a very good Reading podcast yesterday. The Tarlhurst End, it's called, which was very instructive in terms of mood and worthwhile conversation around all of the Reading issues. Tarlhurst End, named after the noisiest part of Elm Park back in the day.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems as hard.